Hi, this is Chris McGregor. The work of Discerning Hearts really could not continue without your prayers and support. Between now and December 31st, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to Discerning Hearts. We are a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. Click the donate button on discerninghearts.com or inside the Discerning Hearts free app. Your generous support will allow us to continue producing the type of spiritual formation programming you have come to expect from us, like those from Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Monsignor John Esseff, and so many more. Please prayerfully consider supporting our mission, which is dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. Thank you, and God bless from all of us at Discerning Hearts. DiscerningHearts.com presents St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher is a member of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, a religious community dedicated to retreats and spiritual formation, according to the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Father Gallagher is featured on several series on the EWTN television network, including Living the Discerning Life. He's the author of numerous books on the teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola, as well as on the teachings of Venerable Bruno Lanteri, founder of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Welcome back, Father Gallagher.
Thank you, Chris.
We find ourselves in a very special time in the life of St. Thérèse and her cousin Marie. Are they together now in the Carmel?
Yes, they're together now, and they will be together just a little over 2 years. So Marie enters in August 15th, 1895, and Thérèse is 22 at that point. And Thérèse will die September 30th, 1897, so just a little over 2 years. And it's one of the beauties of this relationship that it allows us to watch Thérèse interact with a cousin, a child playmate, and now a novice, one of her novices in the Carmel, when Thérèse herself is at the height of her own spiritual journey. But we'll say more about that. I want to go back now to that August 15th, 1895, when Marie enters. And we discussed last time the poem that Thérèse writes and all that happens that day. For the sake of her family, who were great benefactors of the Carmel and great friends of the Carmel, within a few days of Marie's entrance, they have Celine take a series of 12 photos of Marie. And these are posted on the archive of the Carmel of Lisieux. So you can go on the website, look up Marie, and then you can find this set of photos. And they're well worth looking at because they certainly show Marie, but they also give a pretty good image of the life of the Carmelite sister as it was lived then. So there are 12 of them. You see Marie in the chapel praying. You see her in the refectory working. You see her out in the courtyard with various utensils doing outdoor work. You see her in her room. You see her in a variety of settings. And I'm just going to look at one of them briefly here, and I have it here before me. And this is Marie, who is in the kitchen, and she's doing dishes after one of the meals. And so she's facing to her right. There's a window behind her. Her sleeves are rolled up to the elbow. She's drying dishes at this point. She's holding a dish. There's a drying cloth there also. And to her right is the stove with its various utensils. And obviously this is a pose. Celine has asked her to take this pose. And as we've said in other settings, the photograph at the time required that the subject of the photo remain unmoving for 9 seconds, which, as we've said in other settings, is why you don't get these spontaneous big smiles. Try sometime just to hold a smile on your own for 9 seconds and you'll see. But you do get a hint of a smile in Marie in these photos, and it's really very lovely. It just sort of wins you over. So she's looking, and there is a bit of a smile on her face. She's not wearing a veil because of the work that she's doing. And in any case, she's not a novice yet at this point. So Marie is now plunged into the life of the Carmel as she begins. The next thing I'd like to do is read a letter that Thérèse wrote to Marie's sister, Jeanne, who is a little bit lost in the whole story. We don't often refer to her. So she is Marie's older sister, the first of the children born to Thérèse's aunt and uncle, Isidore and Céline. And I think part of the reason we don't hear so much about her is because she is the one of the cousins who didn't enter religious life, and she married. So the five Martin sisters all enter religious life, and then Marie does as well. And Jeanne is the one who marries, and she marries the doctor, François Lanel, and they move to Caen, which is a short distance away, so that she's no longer there in Lisieux after they marry. She and her husband will return after the death of Marie's mother, Céline, because Isidore is alone. So very generously, Dr. François gives up his practice in Caen and moves to Lisieux, and they live with him in his remaining years. One of the great sorrows of their life was that they never had children. Jeanne deeply wanted children, especially a son, whom she hoped would become a priest someday. But in latter years, after her husband François dies, she adopts a grandniece who is an orphan and really raises this young girl, and that becomes an important part of her life toward the end. But what I want to read now is a letter that Thérèse writes to Jeanne just 2 months after Marie has entered. So we're in mid-October now of 1895. And this is unspoken in the letter, but it's hard not to perceive that this is one of these exquisite things that Thérèse does, that Jeanne had resisted her sister Marie's entrance into the Carmel and resisted right up to the moment that Marie entered, and then had a kind of change of heart and became very supportive of it. By that time, both of Marie's parents, Isidore and Céline, were won over to the authenticity of her vocation, but Jeanne was the one who resisted. This is pure supposition on my part, but you're the only one in the two families who has not entered religious life, and you're married. You're the only one that's married, and now the last one who has not yet entered religious life or is doing her best to enter, that's Léonie. At this point, she also leaves and joins the Carmel. I think we can readily understand that this could not have been easy for Jeanne. So Thérèse writes to her, and she begins her letter by referring to Jeanne has written to Thérèse. That letter has not been conserved, but Jeanne has evidently talked about some very uplifting and happy things that had happened in their recent time with Isidore and Céline in the family after Marie has entered. This is a time of much sadness for them all, obviously. They believe in the vocation, but they're losing a very loved daughter or sister into the Carmel. And she has told Thérèse that there was actually something very joyful in that visit. And so that leads Thérèse to talk about the joyful presence of Marie in the Carmel. And she says, the whole novitiate is stricken by the contagion. So she's been playfully speaking of this joy as a kind of illness from which you don't want to be cured. And she's saying the whole novitiate is stricken by the contagion. So Marie is one of five novices, and Thérèse is the assistant novice mistress. Céline, Thérèse's sister, is one of them. The whole novitiate is stricken by the contagion since the entrance of the little rascal. And so the nickname that she gives to Marie here literally would mean like a little mischievous elf, you know, or a fairy or something like that, who deepened the wrinkles and whitened the hair of her dear Fifine. Fifine is a baby nickname for Jeanne. And so Thérèse is just, again, being playful here that the antics of this little rascal, you know, did actually just the opposite. You loved her and found her so joyful. But she's saying that by saying the opposite here, deepened the wrinkles and whitened the hair. It is a great consolation for me, the old senior of the novitiate. Now, there's a sense in which Thérèse never left the novitiate, and that was by her own desire. And then she's appointed the assistant novice mistress, and she retains that until her illness in the last month no longer allows her to carry out that function. It is a great consolation for me, the old senior of the novitiate, to see so much gaiety surrounding my last days. And the editor's comment here that probably Jean would have never imagined that there was some reality to this. In fact, Thérèse will live only another 2 years, a little less than 2 years from this time. And you get in this and in other ways the presentiment in Thérèse that her life is not going to last at length. It rejuvenates me, that is Marie's presence, and in spite of my 7.5 years of religious life, my gravity often breaks down in the presence of the charming rascal who delights the whole community. So she gives an example of this now. If you had only seen her the other day with your photograph and that of Francis, it would have made you laugh. Our mother brought them into our recreation. Now, Thérèse often refers to these recreations, which were a significant part of the day. So twice a day in after the midday meal and then in the evening, the sisters would all gather together. If the weather was pleasant, they would be outdoors in the courtyard of the cloister or somewhere outdoors. And if the weather didn't permit, they'd be there was a common room in the monastery where they'd all gather. And some of them might be sewing or attending to different things, but they were free to speak during this time. And so that's what Thérèse is talking about. We could image all of the sisters gathered together. And the mother prioress brings in a photo of Jean and Francis just to show it to the community, just as something pleasant or nice for them. Our mother had brought them into our recreation and was having them passed around to each sister. When Sister Marie of the Eucharist's turn, so that's her name now in religious life, from now on she's Sister Marie of the Eucharist, she took the photographs one after another, giving them her most gracious smiles and saying to each, "Bonjour Fifine," which is the baby nickname for Jeanne, "Bonjour Séraphin," which is the baby nickname for her husband Francis. Now, you just have to image this, so the sisters are all looking at them and they maybe something pleasant to say and then pass them on. But when Marie gets them, she holds up Jean's photo and gives it a very gracious smile and then says, "Greetings, bonjour, Fifine," with that baby nickname, and does the same with Francois's photo. These expressions of tenderness made all the Carmelites laugh, who are very happy to have so nice a postulant. Her beautiful voice is the joy and delight of our recreation. So that's another thing that they'll ask Marie to sing during the recreations, and they just love to hear her singing. But what delights my heart especially more than our dear angel's talents and exterior qualities is her disposition to virtue. Now, in all of this, what Thérèse is doing is telling Jeanne that Marie is really happy here. She's really doing well, and we're really happy to have her. So very lovingly, she's speaking to that place in Jeanne that is bearing the heaviness of this. And of course, she knows that she has resisted this. And then she says the same thing in a different way with Scripture. "The sacrifice that God has just asked from you is very great, dear Jeanne. So I know this was really hard for you. But has he not promised?" Now, I said earlier, and you could do the math of this if you really wanted, but the further along Thérèse goes, the more and more frequently Scripture comes into her writing. It just becomes very natural for her because she has prayed so much with it. And that's a whole other issue that we could get into if we wanted to. But this is the time when she's saying that other books were helpful in the past, but now there's only one, and that's the gospel. "The sacrifice that God has just asked from you is very great, dear Jeanne. But has he not promised, quote, 'to the one who for him leaves father or mother or sister,'" and she underlines sister, you know, that Jeanne has given up her sister, "'has he not promised to those who give up father or mother or sister 100-fold in this life? Well, for his sake, you did not hesitate to separate yourself from a sister dear beyond all that can be expressed. Jesus will be obliged to hold to his promise.'" He promised if anyone did that 100-fold, he'll be obliged to hold to it. And then she gives, as she so often does, one of these original takes on a familiar scripture. I know that usually these words are applied to religious souls. So generally we think of Marie, who has left her family, or anyone who has entered the consecrated life or priesthood or left family for the sake of the Lord in any way. That's the way we think of these words applying. I know that usually these words are applied to religious souls. However, I feel in the depths of my heart that they were spoken for the generous parents who make the sacrifice of children dearer to them than they are to themselves. So, as I understand this passage, Therese, as I feel deep in my heart, that the Lord was applying this not only to those who leave, let's say, for the consecrated life, but for those who love them, the family who allow them to go and accept that separation for the sake of the Lord.
We'll return to St. Therese and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher in just a moment. Did you know that Discerning Hearts has a free app where you can find all your favorite Discerning Hearts programming? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Monsignor John Assaf, Deacon James Keating, Father Donald Haggerty, Mike Aquilina, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and so many more. They're all available on the free Discerning Hearts app. Over 3,000 spiritual formation programs and prayers, all available to you with no hidden fees or subscriptions. Did you also know that you can listen to Discerning Hearts programming wherever you download your favorite podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, even on Audible, as well as numerous other worldwide podcast streaming platforms? And did you know that Discerning Hearts also has a YouTube channel? Be sure to check out all these different places where you can find Discerning Hearts Catholic Podcasts, dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. Discerning Hearts presents for Advent the writings of Carol Hauslander. Christ's dependence and our Advent.
By his own will, Christ was dependent on Mary during Advent. He was absolutely helpless. He could go nowhere but where she chose to take him. He could not speak. Her breathing was his breath. His heart beat in the beating of her heart. In the seasons of our Advent, waking, working, eating, sleeping, being, each breath is a breathing of Christ into the world.
Carol Hauslander reflects on the profound mystery of Christ's dependence on Mary during Advent. By his own will, the all-powerful God chose to be utterly vulnerable and reliant on her. This self-giving humility exemplifies divine love and invites us to ponder how our own lives, in their simplest moments, might echo this mystery. Hauslander suggests that in our daily activities, our seasons of Advent, each breath we take is an opportunity to bring Christ's presence into the world.
By his own will, Christ was dependent on Mary during Advent. He was absolutely helpless. He could go nowhere but where she chose to take him. He could not speak. Her breathing was his breath. His heart beat in the beating of her heart. In the seasons of our Advent, waking, working, eating, sleeping, being, each breath is a breathing of Christ into the world.
Today, consider each task, each interaction, as a moment where you can breathe Christ into your surroundings. How might you, like Mary, be a vessel for his presence in the seemingly ordinary aspects of your life? For more of the writings of Carol Hauslander, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find them within the free Discerning Hearts app.
Discerning Hearts provides content dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. To continue production of these podcasts, prayers, and more, go to discerninghearts.com and click the donate link found there or inside the free Discerning Hearts app to make your donation. Thanks, and God bless.
We now return to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher.
So there's more in the letter, but I don't want to prolong things too much, but you can see what Thérèse is doing here. This is always Thérèse, and increasingly, as the years of her life go by, she is completely other-centered. Can you see there's nothing about Thérèse herself in this? It's all focused on Jeanne and her need, and with such loving sensitivity, Thérèse finds the way to bring peace, to uplift her heart there where the burden has been. Now, the editors include at this point something that we'll see later, but it does enter well here, so let's comment on it. Thérèse, for the sake of Jeanne, she describes the gaiety, the joy, the humor that Marie brings to the community. But as we've said in other cases, Marie could take things too far, and this could become a little giddy at times. And so later, Marie wrote down some remembrances of Thérèse, which were later brought into the cause of canonization, and this is one of them. So we'll read it here. So she wrote, describes Thérèse's counsels to her. Now you can think of Marie as a novice, Thérèse as the assistant novice mistress. They're meeting regularly, as Thérèse does with all five, to discuss whatever problems or struggles or growth or joys that she may have. So Thérèse, she says, tells her the following. In recreation, when you're with the other sisters like that, practice virtue. Be lovable toward all. Do you know, this ocean of Thérèse. Every one of these things opens up so much you could look at. Thérèse did this herself in such a striking way that people thought that she had a deep friendship with the one sister, for example, who was almost unbearable for her. And her own sisters, Pauline and Marie, it was hard for them that Thérèse didn't seek them out in the way that they would have kind of wanted to be a continuation of the relationship that had been there before they all entered. But Thérèse was very, very firm on that, that she didn't enter the Carmel for that. But nonetheless, she's now inculcating this to Marie. In recreation, practice virtue. Be lovable toward all, no matter with whom you are speaking, not just the one that you'd really like to talk to. It doesn't matter who it is, but be lovable. I think we can all see the applications of this all over the place, you know. That's why I've said before, Marie is every one of us, you know. At the school of Thérèse. Be lovable toward all, no matter with whom you are speaking. Be happy out of virtue, not whim. When you are sad, so what if you don't feel cheerful and now you're with the others? When you are sad, forget yourself and show cheerfulness. Take pleasure, yes, enjoy the recreations, take pleasure, but especially out of love for others. There is a foolish gaiety about you at times. Do you think it pleases the sisters? They laugh at your foolishness, it is true, but it does not edify them. This would be one of the things, one of the ways in which Thérèse tries to help Marie, I guess you could call it mature, moderate in a healthy way, the exuberant, ardent quality, which is a richness, but which can spill over too much in various ways. And so you see it there as Thérèse relates to her. And finally, along these lines, I'll quote just a couple of sentences from Jeanne herself. She was a witness in the cause for canonization, and she says the following. My young sister Marie entered the convent in 1895 and lived there for 2 years with the servant of God. So Thérèse at this point is not yet venerable. She's a servant of God. I often heard my parents say how happy they were that Sister Marie of the Eucharist, parentheses, that was my sister's name in religion, would have her, Thérèse, as a model at the beginning of her religious life. Okay, so Marie is now in the Carmel, and she will share the last 2 years of Thérèse's life. And before we move into that, I think we need to take just a moment to get a sense of where Thérèse is on her journey when these two join up together again after the years of separation. Thérèse enters when she's 15. When Marie enters, She's now 23, so there's been a long physical separation, as she says, that 7.5 years. But it's a very beautiful thing that they're going to be together for these last two climactic years of Therese's life. But to get a feel for that, let's just do a quick review of what's happening in Therese's life at this time. We'll begin just this quick survey at the end of the year 1894. So Therese is 21 at this point, and it's at the end of that year, which she'll describe later when she writes her story of a soul. This is the time when she discovers what becomes the origin of her little way, as she calls it. And this happens because when Celine enters, so Celine enters in September of that year, 1894, and when she enters the Carmel, she brings with her extensive passages from the Old Testament, which she had copied out from a Bible that the Guérins had. Until then, Therese had never had access to the Old Testament in any written form. She had the New Testament, but not the Old. And so for the first time now, she has this partial but relatively extensive access to the Old Testament, and it's going through two Old Testament passages that she discovers her little way.
In a Carmel, they would not have access to at least one book of sacred scripture containing both the Old and the New.
It just wasn't a common thing at that point. It was the priests, you know, who were learned in this. The real interesting question there is how it came to be that the Guérins had a copy of the Bible and in French in their home. And then Celine's interest, which led her to copy out extensive passages from it. But this was not normal. Therese has the New Testament because she was given at a certain point a book of prayers. And in the latter part of this book was the New Testament. And what Therese did was to separate that from the rest of the book, put a cover on it. And as she says, she always carried the gospel on her heart. That's in the pocket of her Carmelite habit. And that's what she prays with. The 2 hours of personal prayer twice a day for an hour was part of the Carmelite life. And it's her deep penetration into the scripture in this way that leads to the abundant use of it that you see in all of her writings. So now she does have access to the Old Testament. Proverbs 9:4, whoever is a little one, let him come to me. And then Isaiah 66:12-13, as one whom a mother caresses, so I will comfort you. You shall be carried at the breasts, and upon the knees they shall caress you. Now she describes in the story of a soul, and it would take us too far astray to get into this in depth, but it's these passages which tell her that this impulse she's been feeling, that I don't have to be like a saint on the top of the mountains. All I have to do is to love God with every bit of energy I have in the daily things that he places along my path. So this is the end of 1894 when this happens. In early 1895, she's asked to write a manuscript, the first part of what becomes the story of a soul, what's called Manuscript A. So in 1895, she begins the writing of the story of a soul. And in June of 1895, she gets the inspiration to offer herself as a victim to the merciful love of God with all the richness that goes into this. So these are the years of her great discoveries, the real pillars of her spirituality. All of this is prepared by the earlier years, but we're in the culminating time of her sanctity in these last 2 years. Really amazing how much happened and the growth that happened in that short of a time. 2 months after she offers herself as a victim to merciful love, Marie enters in August of 1895. At the beginning of 1896, Therese finishes the first part of the story of a soul and gives it to Mother Agnes, who is prioress at that time. When Therese gives this notebook to Mother Agnes, Mother Agnes receives it. She doesn't even look at it. She just puts it in a drawer. And months go by, and Therese is absolutely fine with that. She was asked to write it. She wrote it. And now whatever else happens to it, it just doesn't matter at all to her. And it's only months later, when Mother Agnes opens it and begins to read it, that she realizes what a treasure we have there. And then that will lead to the completion of this. In April of this year, 1896, April 2nd and 3rd, and this is Holy Thursday and Good Friday, she has the first two hemoptyses, is the word, coughing up of blood. It's the first serious sign that she has something that is seriously wrong. And it's only a few days after that, shortly after Easter, that Therese suddenly enters into that darkness of faith that will be with her up to the end of her life. In September of 1896, at the request of her older sister Marie, she writes the letter that becomes the second part of the Story of a Soul, Manuscript B. And it's there that she describes the discovery of her vocation. You remember, all of this we're familiar with, that I feel within me other vocations, to be a warrior, a priest, apostle, doctor, martyr. How will I ever fulfill all these things? And then in 1 Corinthians 13, she reads these verses from St. Paul: strive after the better gifts, I will point to you a more excellent way. Charity is the excellent way. And then with great joy, I can't be everywhere in the world doing all of those things, but I can be right in the very heart of the church itself, because the heart of the church is love. This takes place, or is described, in the latter part of 1896. And then we move into 1897, which will be the final year of Therese's life. And it's in early April that Therese falls seriously ill. And from this point on, the illness will be the dominant thing. She gradually has to withdraw from one community practice after another. And finally, in July, is confined to the infirmary and will go through the stages of tuberculosis until her death in September 30th. And it's also during that time, it's in June of that year, that with some delicacy, Mother Agnes of Jesus, who is no longer prioress, Mother Marie de Gonzague, has been reelected as prioress. She is able to suggest to Mother Marie de Gonzague to ask Therese to continue the story, because Therese, in the earlier manuscript, ended with her entrance into Carmel. And so that's where we get manuscript C, which Therese writes at the price of great physical exertion. Finally, he has to give it up in early July, and the last pages are written in pencil. She no longer had the physical strength to manage a pen. But that's where we get the final part of manuscript C. Now, all of this is what's happening in Therese's life during this time that Marie enters. So the distance now between the two of them is enormous. And actually, it was the same thing that Celine had experienced the year earlier, when in 1894 she had entered, and they had been so intimately close and shared spiritual things so deeply before Therese entered. But Celine now found that they were in very different places, and it was not entirely easy for Celine or for Therese to negotiate the difference. And all the more because Therese is in charge of the formation of Celine as assistant novice mistress. And the same is also true of Marie when she enters a year later in 1895. But because the personalities are different, Celine's personality is very strong. She's a warrior. She's energetic. She's not afraid of anything. And if you think of it, she's been managing the household for the last 6 years since their father has fallen ill. She's had to be the strong one who's taken the family through all of this. And now to find herself in the Carmel with its minutiae and all the rest of it was not easy for her. The commentators mentioned something of that with Marie, but my own guess is that it was easier with Marie because her struggles were very different from Celine. It was scrupulosity and getting caught up in herself and overabundant emotion and so forth. But both of them had to negotiate what had become a very different relationship, because Therese is now really at the apex of her sanctity. She's the doctor of the church, and she's the one that St. Pius X will call the greatest saint of modern times. The flip side of that is that they were privileged to have the best formator probably anyone in the church has ever had, you know, to be introduced into religious life. And the fruits of these 2 years, three for Celine, would be decisive for the rest of the life, both of Celine and of Marie.
It is interesting when you say that one of the best formators they could have, especially those who will go back and look at the life of St. Therese and as her quote-unquote spiritual doctrine essentially is developing, they have her formation in particular of these two women who are related to her, but they also have a bit more fuller biographical background of these two women that they're forming, so that when those who are doing investigations look at the effect and how Therese changed in her demeanor towards them and how she was able to grow spiritually outside of that normal relationship, it's not just Therese's life, but we know about the childhood, the life, the mother of Celine. We know of Marie and even Léonie in a different context, in a different convent, but who is being formed by Therese. We know where they started and where they ended up and where that point is where Therese comes in. Am I making sense? We don't usually have that with other novitiates. They don't have the extensive histories written out of their childhoods, or they're not as closely watched.
Yeah, and I would say that that made it in some senses easier for Therese and in some senses harder. Easier because, as you're saying, she knows them so deeply. Harder because they had had a different kind of relationship with her before they entered, and the presumption is that that relationship will continue, but it couldn't in the very different circumstances. So I'd say it was a mixture. One of the things that I'll quote again, Bishop Guy Gaucher, whom, as I've said, I think is the best commentator on Therese. He says this a number of times in commenting on Therese as she works with these novices, that her approach was a mixture of firmness and tenderness. And I think that's about the best description of it. You can already see, for example, that little thing that we quoted about Marie and her overexpressive gaiety. And so Therese is there's a bit of firmness there. You really need to moderate that more. But it's always done with deep tenderness. And we'll see some more examples of this as we go through. Maybe we could add a third word. It's also done with great wisdom and perception, sensitivity, whatever you want to use for that. Because as we've been seeing, and we'll see a bit more as we go along, it's just astounding how perceptive Therese was, how she knew each heart. And she says this at one point, I think it's to her sister Pauline, that the only way to love people is to love them individually, because everyone is so different. You can't love people, all people, in the same way. And she's really a master at this.
Do we have a knowledge of the person who was the novice director for Therese? Because a lot of times, some of those attributes can, first, the seeds of how you treat others is planted by how you've been treated, how a mother or a father engages with a child, and it has an effect on what happens.
Yes, we do know about that. And I'm just smiling a bit because it's a bit of a mixture. This was Sister Marie of the Angels, and she was an excellent religious, just a very, very good religious. And because of that, she was in formation work for many years. So when Therese becomes a novice and she's the novice mistress, she's coming at this out of years of experience and religious life. We'll note, for example, that when Therese has that doubt about her vocation to be a Carmelite, the evening before her vows, and these are perpetual vows, and she describes all this in detail in the Story of the Soul, and in retrospect recognizes it as a temptation. And this is Therese, who's never had a single doubt from age 9 and who has gone to the bishop and even the Holy Father and moved heaven and earth and loved it. But this, the evening before her vows, has this very strong struggle in which she is now convinced that with good will, but she's been misleading her superiors. And with great courage, what she does is she goes into the choir area. All of the sisters are in there. They finish the office, but they haven't gone off to their rooms for the night yet. So in full sight of the community, which the amount of courage that took, as youngest member, professing the next day in obvious distress and in full sight of everyone, but she had no other choice if she wanted to speak to Sister Marie of the Angels. She asks her to come out of the choir. They sit down. She shares all this openly, and her novice mistress completely reassures her, and that's the end of her doubts. So that I just quote that as one instance of, I'd say, the maturity and the competence of Sister Marie of the Angels as a novice mistress. When I share this sometimes in talks, I smile a bit here and I say, if ever a novice mistress got it right, it was this novice mistress about the authenticity of the vocation. But having said all of that, she could also be forgetful of things that she would say to Thérèse, and that caused Thérèse some suffering. So her novice mistress would see her maybe looking a little too tired and tell her that she needed, let's say, to eat certain things or to get certain rest and so on, and then completely forget that she'd said that to Thérèse, and Thérèse is just being faithful, and the novice mistress would say, well, you're certainly pampering yourself, and that's not the way to live religious life. And she also said that in her meetings with her novice mistress, they were very, very difficult for her, and she had a hard time opening herself as much as she esteemed and loved this sister. So I'd say there was a mixture there. How much help? Certainly Thérèse found some help there. But if you ask, from whom did Thérèse find guidance? And this is one of the other marvels of her life, that she discovered so many things. Her spiritual director was the Jesuit Father Pichon, who throughout the entirety of her life in Carmel was in Canada doing intensive work there. So the only contact with him was via letter, and she regularly wrote him letters. Unfortunately, Father Pichon didn't save them. It was about 50 letters that she wrote. Wisely didn't save them, and that's what you do in spiritual direction, but we would have loved to have had them. But he was so overwhelmed with work that he might write to her maybe once a year, something like that. And so she was essentially on her own. But the marvel is that she found her way, and not only found it, but with such richness and such fruit for the entire church. A lot of this, as she said, Jesus is my only director. Not that she wanted it that way, but in point of fact, that's how things turned out.
You've been listening to Saint Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher. Be sure to check out the comprehensive summary and reflection questions contained in the show notes for this episode. To download this particular episode, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find them within the free Discerning Hearts app or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, which is to offer authentic and rock-solid spiritual formation freely to souls around the world. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax-deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for Saint Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher.